Motorcycle Man.
And hello, everybody. This is Ted, and I'm here at the V-Twin Cafe. I'm all by my lonesome tonight, but that's okay because we got something really special going on. And I want to share that with you very shortly. But in the meantime, first, I want to tell you a little something. Those of you who don't know yet, but if you tune into our homepage on a website, which is motorcyclemen.us, you can click a little button there for the Patreon link, and that will enable you to go ahead and subscribe to the show, which will give you also the opportunity to help us give you more. We can give you more content. We're going to give you some video and some additional audio. And this is going to be only for our subscribers. So do that. And we'll try to make the show even better for you. Other things that are going on right now. If you listen to our last episode, which was episode 57, where we had... it was a really good show. You know, and we had the Fashionista was on the show with us, and she told us about the long-distance riding stuff. However, aside from that, if you listened to the show, you would also heard me talking about this device that was on my bike that may have altered my speedometer and caused it not to function properly. Well, turns out that was indeed the issue. It is called a Dakota Digital SIM-1. And what this device is for is if you as an owner of a cruiser, actually believe it or not, for any kind of bike, if you make an alteration to your motorcycle where you put larger tires on, change the rear pulley, change the sprocket size, it will allow you, because once you do something like that, it throws your speedometer off. It's just like anybody with a car or a truck. If you put bigger tires on, it's going to alter your speed. Your registered speed is going to be different than what it originally was. Now, what the SIM-1, the Dakota Digital SIM-1 does is allows you to calibrate your speed on the fly so it is accurate. So it's got two buttons on it. It's got an up button and a down button. And what you do is, I guess most people would put the bike on a dyno, and then you would calibrate your speed that way. So what I was doing this morning on the way to work, going 70 miles an hour, according to my GPS, I was able to calibrate with the button hanging outside of the bike. And I put my throttle lock on at 70 miles per hour, and I hit that up button until it equaled the same number. And that was it. Now she works normally. So there you go. That was the problem. It's a stupid little thing like that, right? All right. So what we've got coming up right now is an interview with Neville Stowe. And this is really great. And Neville was, if you haven't heard about the 9-Minute Moto Film Festival, now's your opportunity to gather together all of your helmet cam video. Get it together, edit it into 9 minutes or less, and enter it into this into this festival. All right, so right now, sit back, relax, get yourself a nice beverage, and listen to that. One more thing before we put that on. Please, again, check out our Patreon thing and subscribe to the show. Also, go on to our Facebook page, which is, of course, facebook.com/motorcyclemenpodcast, and like that page, and because we put some cool stuff on there. And also, you can check us out. All of our podcasts are also on YouTube, and our podcasts are also they're also on Stitcher. But they're also going to be up on SoundCloud soon, so check that out. All right, so thank you very much for listening, and enjoy the show. All right, with me now, here on the line, Skype, coming far away from, you said Banff?
Well, Canmore, Alberta.
Oh, okay, Alberta, Canada, is Neville Stowe. Did I pronounce that correct?
You did.
Okay,
you
good. How's the weather up there by you?
Not bad, actually. We're actually warming up a little bit, which I'm, you know, if this is global warming, then I'm kind of happy. So, because they're forecasting our weekend's supposed to be like 65-ish degrees.
Really?
I'll take it. For November, I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, I'm not complaining either. And Neville, you are the, I guess, creator of the 9-Minute Film Festival, right?
Yeah, that's the 9-Minute Moto Film Festival.
Right, okay.
It's a bit of a mouthful, actually.
Yeah, a little bit. So, you know, it's funny because I talked to, when I did the interview with Jeremy, he said, you know, I got to hook you up with Neville and you got to talk to him. So, and I'm really glad he did. He's a great guy. He really is a great guy. And I guess you've had the opportunity to ride with him, right?
We rode to Alaska this year. But with my cousin, Nick. My cousin came over from the UK, and he rode up there. We also had a friend, Dave Booth, and yeah, we had a blast. It was four guys from completely different backgrounds,
right?
Who just gelled.
Why don't you tell our listeners about yourself and about Moto Exped as well?
Well, obviously, originally I'm from England, as you can probably tell by the accent.
No, really? Well,
although I don't think I've lost it that much, but some people back home might disagree with that. Canada has been home for me for 20 years now. Motorcycles have been with me literally all my life. My family, grandfather, father, uncles, brothers, cousins, you name it, we all rode bikes. I had no option. if I wanted to grow up and do anything different, that wasn't going to be. It wasn't going to happen that way. So I was literally pretty much this has been a part of my life, and it still is. We've seen a lot of advances in motorcycling over the years, and you know, as a kid growing up, everything was either scrambling or that kind of thing. And then from my point of view, from our point of view, anybody who's got a bit of stature, I guess, in their years now, we've seen motocross, supercross, all this stuff. This kind of, there's been so many different varieties, but of motorcycles, I love them all. I used to have favorites, but I just love it all these days. So
two wheels is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, oh, it's fantastic. They've definitely been the majority of my life, without a doubt. I mean, it's not like, I suppose sometimes I do eat, sleep, and breathe them, but it's my way of
de-stressing. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, we have our obsessions and passions, and two wheels. There could be worse things than two wheels.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's not a bad thing to be interested in.
No,
really.
Of course not. Gets a little expensive, but
it can get really expensive, but
just a tad.
Moto Exped is really me. It was originally I did a trip in 2013 that saw me circumnavigate the globe.
Lucky you. We're going to talk about that.
We will do. And what happened was is I actually kind of, at the time, me and my older brother, Andy, fell out with each other. He was supposed to be coming on the... We were supposed to be going as two brothers on a trip with a group of friends. And we had a name for the trip. And anyway, the long and the short of it was is we actually fell out with each other, which is, I guess, that's what brothers do sometimes. Andy actually got me into motorcycling in the first place.
Huh.
So he was 11 years older than me, and I remember as a little boy looking up at his motorcycles, and that was it. He saw that twinkle in my eye, and I remember him just getting my first ever motorcycle so I could actually ride it around the fields back in Buckinghamshire back at home, and away we went. But when we split up just before this world trip, I teamed up with a guy called Ulf Müller, who's a really interesting guy. He lives in Switzerland, and he's a dear friend. If he's listening to this, I'd love to say congratulations on your wedding, Ulf, from last year.
Oh.
He just celebrated his first anniversary. But Moto Exped, I was trying to think of a name, motorcycle expedition, that kind of thing. And I decided to put this website together. I just literally threw it together, which is not easy for me because I'm a bit of an idiot when it comes to that sort of thing.
That's okay. You're allowed.
And I went to Ulf and I said, I've created this website. It's called Moto Exped, and we can put our world trip on there. We can show people what we do. And he said, oh, I actually have just designed RTW2013.com. And I went, oh, I guess you win. And look, it looked so much better than what I'd come up with. So I just kept Moto Xped website on the back burner. What happened was is Moto Xped became a... I actually transposed a bit of my blog and the motorcycle build that I did for the world, the round the world trip onto that website when I got back off the trip.
Okay.
And then it became the parent company for the 9 Minute Moto Film Festival. So rather like, was it Palatoy that used to own G.I. Joe? Everybody knows who G.I. Joe was, but nobody knows who the parent company was.
No.
Same kind of thing.
No, okay. You know? Okay. So Moto Xped is the ghost company behind the 9 Minute Moto Film Festival.
Yeah.
All right.
The 9 oomph, we like to call it, because it's 9mmff, so it's just
So now tell us about that, the 9 Minute Moto Film Festival. How, why, what, where, when, you know, et cetera.
All right. So, excuse me. The 9 Minute Moto Film Festival, it really... Have you ever been to a friend's house and they've said, "Hey, I had a great ride last weekend. Come and see my helmet cam footage." I've done this to people as well. And
I'm that guy also.
And they say, "See that? You see? I just went past a sheep. That almost jumped out in front of me." You know. It's the most mind-numbingly boring thing on the planet, right. Especially when they mount it on the top of their head.
Yeah.
Because all you get to see every once in a while is you get to see either the screen or the speedo or the road coming towards you.
Yeah.
Maybe 45 minutes until you've gone catatonic.
Yeah. Okay. Guilty as charged.
Well, I am too. Yeah. And it became very apparent to me. I actually started looking at some of the helmet cam footage that I'd taken from riding through places like Kazakhstan and Russia, only to realize that I was that guy. I had no idea what I was doing. And so that going hand in hand with a friend of ours, husband and wife friends of ours, Jim and Grace Smith. And Jim and Grace said, "Why don't you come over to our house? We're going to invite a whole bunch of friends, and we're going to give you 15 minutes to do a slideshow on what you did on a bike this summer. It's just a good social evening, right? Where a few friends come over, and everybody shows each other what we're going to do on a bike." And I thought, you know, I'm going to put a movie together. It was such an idiotic idea to begin with. I had no idea about editing software. I had no idea about sound. I had no idea how to crop moves. And it was just a massive learning curve from my point of view. Some people just get hold of this stuff and go with it naturally.
Right.
You know, but this is kind of where it started, was at Jim and Grace's house. When we sat there, we watched everybody's slideshows, and then we produced two small movies at 7 minutes long. And they were... it kind of showed, it was my wife Michelle's first ever ride up to the Yukon. This is 2014 actually. So she'd never done a long distance ride before. So we put together a short movie saying, "This is what we did this summer." And everybody sat there and went, "Wow, we can do stuff with helmet cameras."
Yeah. Fun stuff.
Yeah. And so I said, "Well, we're going to start up a little film festival at my friend's restaurant, Russell's restaurant in, and get this, this is a cool name. It's the Mad Dog Cafe in Dead Man's Flats."
Great. That's beautiful.
Isn't it just?
That's perfect.
Best curry in Western Canada. That is the reason why Russell was put on this planet, was to cook curry.
That's it. There you go. Everybody has a goal in their life, right? And that's and a purpose.
He does, and the man is good at it. So I wanted to combine his cafe with something that I might be able to bring there as well, mainly to put bums on seats there to begin with. Yeah. But we threw the gauntlet down to all of our friends. We said, "You know what? Why don't you go away and learn an editing software if you haven't already, and give us a movie. Give us a movie, and don't make it any longer than 9 minutes." And the reason why Well, I'll get back to that later on.
Yeah.
But we, what we decided was, is if you can make a 9-minute movie, and editing a 9-minute movie with your sound and everything, you know, from something like a helmet camera or one of those action cameras or whatever, that really is going to take you about roughly 8 to 12 hours.
Yes.
To put it together the way you want to put it
right.
together. So we didn't want people to work more than that. I mean, that's a day's work. You know, you should be getting paid for that.
So, paid? Who gets paid for that?
Yeah, I know. So and we laid the gauntlet down to our friends. We said, please, 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 don't give us hours of footage of a dirt road coming towards you.
Yeah.
Let's make a movie about what you do on a motorcycle, so you can show your peers. So we wanted to give people this challenge, and it took. I mean, the quality of the work these days is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Wow! When I first heard about the festival, I thought it was fascinating that you would do that, because when you explained it on the website, why? And I was, you're absolutely right. Because I have probably 3, 4, maybe 5 hours of motorcycle footage that I don't want to show anybody, because only I'm going to enjoy it. Because I've posted 30 minutes of a ride on YouTube. And I'm going like, I think I got like 6 views, you know,
yeah.
And they only lasted like about a minute or so. And this, you know, so who's watching this? Right. Then 9-minute field festival. Brilliant, brilliant idea. Now, how many years have you been doing this festival now?
No, it's been three years. Started really in, it's not been going too long. The reason why it started off obviously very small, and it still is quite small. I mean, it's not a very big festival yet. We'd like to build it. We would really honestly love to build this up. It's been going for 3 years, we're coming from strength. We're going to strength to strength every year.
In
this year just gone, we just teamed up with Grant and Susan from HorizonsUnlimited.com, which is probably the foremost motorcycle travel website on the planet. I would argue that point, without a doubt, because they're extremely good people. And we discussed this, and they said, they believe in what we do, and we could actually bring our little 9-minute film festival and have a little mini Horizons Unlimited version every year, or every one of their venues that we chose.
Right.
So this year, the 9-minute went to 16 countries.
Wow!
So we should call ourselves the International 9-minute.
I think you're beyond. It's not just a Canadian thing anymore, right?
Yeah,
no, you are global now.
We've gone global, and we're inviting people from all over the world to submit their movies about what they do on or with a motorcycle.
All
right. It started off about with travelers.
Yeah.
And people who would go through. Well, I mean, we do like to see how other cultures live. We like to see what other countries are like, where we've ridden through. It's a fascination for most motorcyclists, whether you're going from state to state or country to country. That's what we enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So it was mostly for set up by travelers, but it's not really beholden to that. We want to, if you're restoring a motorcycle and you're filming it, if you're racing a motorcycle, if you're out doing enduro, for example, that kind of stuff, and you're filming it, please, we want to see this stuff, because it's a moto film festival. It's not just an adventure film festival.
Right. Okay. All right. Makes sense. No, yeah. I was going to get into like what inspired you, but we know it's your two friends who inspired you to do this. And what were the names again?
Jim and Grace Smith.
Jim and Grace. So it's not the Jim and Grace Smith Festival, obviously, but it could be that.
We should actually have the Jim and Grace Award, actually.
Yes. Do you really?
No, we don't yet. But
You should.
It's like it just came into my head. So
well, write that down right now before you forget. How many submissions did you get in the very beginning, and how many are you getting now?
We probably got about 10 submissions in the beginning. Now we're getting I think this year in total I think we probably got about 65. So they're I mean, some of them we can't use. This is one of them.
Oh, I wonder why.
This is a family show, kids.
Oh, okay.
So, sometimes people are breaking copyrights like crazy.
Really? Is that because of the audio or because, and it obviously can't be because of the video, but probably because of the audio, right?
Yeah. Predominantly, it's because of the audio. We there's something that we do ask on the website is make sure you got permission to use somebody else's music. Or there's so many royalty-free music websites out
absolutely.
There.
Oh, yeah.
So some of this stuff we can't use. Some of it is just, I mean, we got one submission a while back from these crazy Bulgarians, and it's nothing but burnouts and wheelies.
Yay.
So it was kind of fascinating to watch for the first 15 seconds, and then it's like, oh, boy. So, yeah, we get there's some stuff that we honestly can't use, but there's other stuff that is just wonderful. The footage is amazing.
Now, so you're getting these submissions that you're getting. They're it's all kinds of things like adventure touring, moto racing, everything. People cooking. It doesn't really matter, right?
It doesn't really matter. It's about the lifestyle they have with the motorcycle.
All right.
And so. I mean, mostly it's travelers. We've had some wonderful submissions. One was from I'll just name a couple of names here. Adam Torzinski in Poland submitted a movie which is a personal favorite of mine. I'm not a judge, by the way. I just to go back on this.
You're the figurehead, right? You're just a figurehead.
I just set this up and make it. I just push all the buttons.
Of which you're not too experienced at doing, right?
No, I'm not very good at doing it either. So I just get my little screen out of my projector and away we go. But the Adam Torzinski's movie was a personal favorite of mine. That was about a ride through the Himalayas on a Royal Enfield Bullet.
Great bike, right?
I mean, excellent. It's fantastic stuff. And then we have Kinga. Well, now if she's listening, Kinga Tanajowska. I'm hoping I've pronounced her name right. From Australia, brought a movie to us that it was about a ride around Australia. She did a fundraising ride around Australia, and that was really energetic and so that worked out really well. So we have these interesting corners of the globe where people are doing stuff on motorcycles that you wouldn't believe they were doing. Saying that, I mean, locally we got Trent Schumann and Dan Stehauer. The stuff they're doing with their Wanduro website that's out here. These guys are riding motorcycles up mountains. I mean, some of the footage these guys have got is amazing. It's breathtaking. So you sit there and think, wow, how the heck are they going to get out of this one? So, and they're just down the road in Calgary, those guys. It's unbelievable. So.
Wow. And they're sending you all this stuff, and you're all chopped down to 9 minutes or less, right?
9 minutes or less. You have to submit a movie that's over 1 minute long. And the reason why we do that is so many people want they've got the iMovie Maker that makes the 1 minute trailer automatically for you. We've seen enough of those to last a lifetime now. So no, folks, no iMinute movie trailers.
Because you're not doing a movie trailer festival.
We're not doing it. We actually did write in a category this year. We did actually say if anybody's bringing one, we're going to show it before. We're going to show all of your 1 minute movie trailers. Prior to the actual film festival starting in Dead Man's Flats. So you're still welcome to submit this stuff if you want to, but it doesn't really stand a chance of winning an award at the end of May because it's not actually a movie.
For best. So before we get to the real question that everybody wants to know, so I noticed that you have two types of submissions. It's the open call and the professional call. Can you tell me about that? What's that all about?
Open.
I was reading. It's quite funny, actually.
open call is if you're just Joe Blow.
That's everybody. Go ahead.
if that's pretty much all of us. If you've never made money at making a movie, then you're not a professional. So it means that you actually have a job and you do this recreationally and right. You're going to submit a movie. And you might, you're probably going to get some form of recognition for it.
Right.
Uh, professional call means that you actually make money, movie making. You actually have YouTuber paying you thousands of dollars a month because you have this wonderful movie channel, or basically you are a professional movie maker in the respect that you might make movies for a crash helmet company or something like that. You know, so if you want to submit under it, if you've made money making your movies, then you need to submit under the professional category.
Are you getting a lot of people submitting professionally?
No.
No, you're not. No. But you have, just in case you get some of you.
There are a few guys out there that are actually friends of ours as well that we know that would fall into the professional category. And I would love to see movies from them, actually. Right. If they're listening, Daniel and Ed, I would love to hear something from you guys.
You're hoping for Ewan McGregor or Charlie Borman to send you something.
We could do that too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, who knows? You never know. This podcast is heard around the world as well. So you never know. All right. Now, the question everybody wants to know. Why 9 minutes?
Well, we were coming up with a time span, obviously. How long should the movies be? And my daughter, it's been a standing joke in my family for ever since I was taking my daughter to the cinema, which has been, you know, she's 16 now, so every time I get to the cinema, if we're watching some Disney movie or whatever, I'd get into the cinema and I would be asleep in the cinema within 10 minutes. So we've established that my attention span is less than 10 minutes.
Okay.
So you've got 9 minutes, folks.
So that's it.
That's it.
It's because you have a short attention span.
Because I must have ADD or something. Sorry, I didn't mean that against. That's not a slight on people.
No, I understand. but what happens when you string like 10 9-minute movies together? Now, you know, does that hurt you? So you only get to judge the first one. Oh, you're not a judge.
if you do that, actually, I mean, we have spoken about this with some of the movie makers as well. I would encourage you to make part 1, 2, and 3 if you've got an 18-minute movie.
Okay.
Give us part 1, 2, and 3. I'm not going to play them consecutively, though, because I'm awkward like that.
And you'll fall asleep.
Because otherwise, it would be the 18. You know, it would be the 20. Sorry, it would be the 27-minute movie.
Right.
So we're not going to do that. But what I will. So if you're creative and you made three, like a part 1, 2, and 3, that could be shown independently. So I could show you part 3, and you wouldn't know any difference. You wouldn't know that there was a part 1 and 2 to begin with. So I will show them. So it doesn't. You know, you can make it in 9-minute sections if you want to.
Oh, okay. Now, this isn't one of the questions that I had sent you, but do you have a staff that reviews all of these movies?
We do, but they're not an actual staff. They're a group of friends, and some of them dread it. I phone them up and go, "Would you be a judge this year?" And they're, "Oh, no." It's like, yeah, you're going to have to watch like 50 movies, but luckily they're all short. So, and we, you know, the guys will come over to our house, or we'll go to their house, or we'll group. Last year we had 4 judges, but I'm not going to name them because the poor guys are, you know, they might fear for their lives. But they, it was quite the task actually. there's quite a burden of responsibility because they sit there and they look at this stuff and they think, well, wow. You know, some people are submitting movies in another language, for example.
And, oh yeah.
So different cultures, that kind of thing. So they really do study it and they go through it. So, if you're listening out there and you're any one of my friends, then there's a chance I'm going to call on you this year.
Here's another question for you. I just dawned on me. What's your judging criteria?
For each movie,
I send you a movie, 9-minute movie, about 8 minutes and 55 seconds. I send you a movie, and then how do you judge it to determine if it's to go on to be?
Well, first of all, it goes to we pre-screen it. We make sure that the music that's being used, for example, we need to know that you've got permission to use it.
Right.
So that comes into. So all of the stuff comes in a submission form that you go through at the website, because you can submit on our website. And so you declare on a piece of paper there you actually have permission to use the music or you know where it's come from, and you haven't broken anybody's copyrights.
Okay.
We have to trust you on that.
Of course.
So there's no other way we can not trust you. And then we review the movie. Now, if we're seeing nudity, you're listening, Ed.
Immediately disqualification, right?
Seeing nudity or something that's 18A related, you know, then of course the idea is this whole thing's a family show. We want motorcyclists to go there with their kids,
right,
and see this stuff. So we're not going to show that kind of thing. No. Not in public. So not in front of kids. You know. So we pre-screen it first, and then is it eligible to be shown at the festival? It goes through to a yes. Then we put it aside, and then we carry on with the next few movies until we have a short list of stuff that we want to watch, and then we'll go back and review this stuff again.
Okay. But yeah. Now, as far as it goes for what qualities in the movie you're looking for, is it? Humor, is it content, is it just cinematography, is it what things do you say this is like the best one I've seen, or this one really should be lining the bottom of my trash can? So
exactly that. So I mean there are so many things that go together to make a good little movie. The composition of the movie, the way the sound has been put in, basically, so edited in. That's 50% of the equation right there, is the sound.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So many people think that it's just the cinematography, but it's not. And remember, this festival started up with just helmet cams.
Yeah.
So it's not just about helmet cams anymore, but that was its roots, and we still encourage that because everybody pretty much is wearing a helmet cam. All you got to do is take that footage, edit it, and stop it rotting on your hard drive, basically. It out there, so because the Earth's magnetic field is going to get to it eventually. It's going to die
eventually. All right.
Then there's the flip side of it is how well was it filmed? How was it blended? How was it composed? How was it? Did you do much color blending in the whole thing? Did you have? How was it cut? Is there a story behind it? That's a big deal, really. I mean, is there a story behind it? Was it narrated? There's a whole bunch of different things. Right now, from our point of view, we're still a small enough festival that we embrace everything. We bring everything in and we'll look at it and we'll just say, you know what? This was a great movie. You know.
In the previous years, have you ever gotten anything that just was like so fantastic that you actually would go back and watch it again?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. There's a couple of people out there that I can think of that... But we sat there and thought, wow, you know, the bar just got raised.
Wow.
So, I would love to see work from those guys again, without a doubt. So,
You never. Now, when do you have the festival every year?
So the festival, the one where we all go camping and we have curry and we drink as well. So
curry and drink.
It was great. We had about 125 people at the last one.
Okay.
That's at the end of May. It's always the last weekend in May at the Mad Dog Cafe in Dead Man's Flats, Alberta, which is literally about 200 yards from the provincial campground, the Three Sisters provincial campground. So you don't have to worry about a hotel. You can ride there on a motorcycle. You can pitch your tent. You pay your camping fee there. You can have a fire pit in the evening. And we throw movies in the restaurant on the two evenings, the Friday night and the Saturday night. And it's usually, proceedings usually start around 6 p.m.
You roll out the dirt carpet, right?
Yeah. I like that idea. That's a good one. I like that.
All right.
It's an AstroTurf or something.
AstroTurf, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I want to, in my mind, see this like Hollywood thing, like, but everybody's all dirty, you know,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. It's just real casual though, right?
It's really casual. Yeah, they're showing up. It's a whole bunch of unshaven guys they rolled up on their motorcycles. The motorcycles are pretty well beat up. They've been around the block, these guys, right? So, it's just, and from the Canadians' point of view, especially in the Rocky Mountains here, it's pretty much the start of our motorcycle season. So this really does kick off the start of the motorcycle season for us. So that was why we decided to throw it at the end of May, because then you could just go away for the whole summer with a bit of luck, film as much as you can.
Yeah,
you've got the whole Canadian winter.
And then you have a whole winter to edit it and get it ready for next year.
7 months of winter. Makes me want to weep. So
you have this in May, and now is all the judging done by the time the festival happens?
All the judging is done by the time the festival happens.
Now, is there alcohol involved while you're doing the judging?
Yeah.
Okay. So some of the results may be skewed a little bit one way or the other.
Totally. No, it's encouraged. I usually show up with a couple of bottles of wine and to someone's house and say, okay, you guys are going to watch movies. Because, like I said, I have my personal favorites, but I don't enter into the judging at all. I don't influence it either. I just sit there and drink wine.
So I must have suspected that probably there's a lot of laughter going on.
Yes, there's a lot of laughter. Probably, some people make some really good, funny movies. Okay.
A lot of falling about, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the room will go quiet when all of a sudden someone will produce a breathtaking piece of footage, and you sit there and think, well, that just sobered us up, didn't it? So,
wow. Can anybody attend this?
For the judging?
Just attend as an audience. Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah,
absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. We would love to see you. We'd love to see you out there.
So, oh, that'd be a lot of fun. Oh, God. That'd be a lot of fun.
Oh, now, it's a hoot. It is a real hoot.
Now, I want to ask you about your you took a ride around the world in 2012.
I did.
I want tell me. Was it 2012?
2013.
All right. So now, tell us about that. And what did you ride? How long did it take? What kind of route did you take?
It's always been a dream ever since I was a kid. I always wanted to basically ride around, literally do a lap of the earth.
Okay.
But it was never in a position to be able to do it. So I did a trip in 1985 where I came over to the US, actually. I this was in the days when you could buy a one-way ticket. I flew into Boston.
Sorry.
So then I stuck my thumb out for about a year and hitchhiked pretty much all over the States and had some good adventures along the way. And that was the start of the serious travel bug at the time. For those of you that remember, the 85 was what? I think Back to the Future got screened that year.
I don't remember that. My brain sort of forget that. I don't know.
But eventually got fed up and I bought a Goldwing in Visalia.
Oh, all right.
I threw my backpack on there and I just carried on for another year, just literally riding around and made a lot of good friends in California and who are still good friends to this day, actually. But that really got me into wanting to travel more on a motorcycle. But in the meantime, of course, I was bringing up a family. I became a dad and got married twice. The upshot of it was I knuckled under. I did the dad thing. I mean, my daughter's 16 now, but and my son is 28. But I decided in 2012 that it was time to go and do something impressive again. Let's just backtrack a bit. In 2009. On the 24th of September 2009, I had a stroke.
Oh, yay, yay, yay.
And I lost the left-hand side of my body. Oh. So I had no feeling, and I lay there in the hospital not knowing if I was ever actually going to walk out of that hospital or not. But I promised myself one thing, and that was if I ever did get up out of that hospital, I was going to lead a much cleaner lifestyle.
Okay.
I not think I was 19 years old.
I take it up to that point, it wasn't very clean?
It wasn't a clean lifestyle, no. Just bad eating and bad habits and that kind of stuff. So cut a long story short there. I cleaned all that right up. And I did my first ride 9 months after the stroke. I did my first ride on my uh, my 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 1200 GSA actually. I did a fundraiser for the Heart and the Stroke Foundation in both the US and Canada, and I rode up the Dempster and up the Dalton Highway up to Prudhoe Bay.
Wow.
But I still couldn't feel my left foot. My left foot was still numb. So don't ever buy a used BMW off me because the gearbox is trapped.
Oh, wow. But, you know, that's impressive that, you know, 9 months after your stroke, you were able to go and do this. So I guess you were, like, so bound and determined to do this. And that's what I think that's people who find themselves in that situation should do exactly the same, is fight back. And that's obviously what you did.
Yeah, you got. I mean, depending on the severity of the stroke, of course. But as human beings, I'm a firm believer now, actually, that we all need to be humbled every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And that did it for me. That really did. So when I decided in 2012 to plan a trip around the world on a motorcycle, I decided to tie that in with a charity as well, which was the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to do something big and impressive, then why not raise some cash for that event for your chosen charity as well?
Yeah.
You're going to do that trip anyway.
Right.
So even if you raise $10, it's going in the right direction.
Exactly.
Right? So I think I raised about $17,500 for the Heart and Stroke.
Wow, that's nice. Impressive.
It was good. You know, it's going in the right direction. Hopefully it helps people out. Because in this day and age, it wasn't just about old guys having strokes. There are kids out there having strokes because they're eating so much processed food these days.
Kidding.
Stuff like that. So that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
But that's where I wanted to put the money.
Okay.
That's where I wanted it to go. So I built a Suzuki DR650 that I bought for $2,000. It says 2004 Suzuki DR650. And I stripped it right down and I built it the way I wanted it built.
Okay.
So basically I went through, we started with a forged piston and worked our way upwards basically. So, so put a pretty decent dirt chassis together on the bike, an oversized tank and some luggage. Now I've got to mention, Tim Bernard here, if that's okay with you.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Tim Bernard is the owner and the brains behind Happy Trail Products in Boise, Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
He makes really, really good gear for, like, in the way of panniers and racks for most bikes. And he was kind enough to sponsor me.
Oh, wow.
And he was great. He believed in what I was doing. And so I went to visit him, got the bike all fettled up, and then it was time to set off. I flew the bike from Canada to London in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
So rode down to the southwest to meet my mum, because that's where she lives, and carried on riding to go and see a friend of mine, Tiffany. Tiffany Coates is, I think she still goes down in the Guinness Book of World Records as the most traveled female on the planet on a motorcycle.
Really?
I think she is. So, wow. Went to see her. And that took me right the way down to Land's End in Cornwall, where I turned around and waved across the Atlantic at Newfoundland, thinking, well, in so many months, I'm going to be in Newfoundland. I turned around 180 degrees and started riding. And it took me through England, France, Switzerland, Austria. We went through Liechtenstein, Germany, back into Austria, through Hungary, through Romania, Moldova, Transnistria, or the Transdniester region, which is, folks, you got to Google that one. That's not even a country, but they still ask for your passport. We were there for hours. So And the craziest biker party I've ever been invited to in Transnistria. It was incredible.
What, say that again. Trans what?
Transnistria.
Transnistria.
It sounds like something from, like, you find, like, Dracula or something there.
Yeah, that or something in a very bad neighborhood. I'm not really. I'm gonna have to write that down. Transnistria, right?
No. Transnistria.
Transnistria. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Go on. I'm sorry.
And that's that whole Transdniester region has got its own. I mean, that's a whole different conversation, that place. But yeah, we had this crazy biker party there. I actually won the prize. I think there was probably about 1,000 people there. I won the prize for the person who'd ridden the furthest to get to the events. It's like, yeah, crazy Canadian guy. Right? They gave me this big bag of prizes, and then I never saw the prizes again all evening. So everybody just got drunk, and that was it. So. But we went through the Ukraine. We actually rode through literally right past those fields, you know, where that aircraft was taken down last year by the Russians. So, I mean, we're literally through that whole Donetsk area. Wow. We rode through there 1 year before all that happened. We entered Russia in Kamensk and carried on to Volgograd, which used to be the old Stalingrad.
Okay.
Down to Astrakhan, where they have a second Kremlin, actually, in Astrakhan. Oh. Very impressive place, and then crossed into Kazakhstan.
Okay.
About 5,000 miles through Kazakhstan, and we sort of zigzagged everywhere, and that was pretty hot weather. And then headed north up into the Altai region, up into Russia, which was beautiful. The idea was to enter Mongolia from the Altai region as well, but it was too wet. And Ulf's bike was falling apart in front of our eyes at that particular. And his air filter was belching out black smoke.
I said,
better put your spare air filter in. And he goes, you didn't tell me to bring a spare air filter.
What kind of bike was he riding?
He was riding a Yamaha XT600, the original version. They're a great little bike. And it's the closest the Europeans can buy to a DR650, because the DR650 in England won't pass the emission laws. We had to turn back into Russia. We went through Novosibirsk. We used the Trans-Siberian Highway, which was still partially under construction. So there were sometimes hundreds of miles of just dirt, and you're dealing Russian truckers as well, which sometimes can be a bit of a challenge. Then we dropped down from Ulan-Ude in Russia. We dropped down into Mongolia, which is, and then we got through Mongolia to the oasis in Ulaanbaatar, and that's when I actually received an email saying, "You know that guy, your buddy." Mike, who was looking after your job while you were away, I said yes. They said, he's got cancer. Can you come home?
Oh, boy.
And it was then a race. I had to ride the bike home. So I actually got home 6 weeks earlier than I thought I was going to.
Wow.
Ulf and I rode solid for about a week. We were, bearing in mind we were in Ulaanbaatar, and I have ridden a motorcycle with Ulf across the rest of Russia, down to Vladivostok, caught the ferry from Vladivostok to Sokcho in Korea, rode across Korea, crated the bikes, flew them into Vancouver and rode to Canmore so that I could take over my old job again, so that my buddy could go and have dental treatment and start his radiation therapy.
Wow.
Then. Once he'd started to recover from this, that was about September by that happened, I went to my boss and said, okay, I need to continue on the journey. He said, well, can you do it next year? I went, no. Not sponsors. I said, we got to do this.
Right.
So, and that was the ride across Canada to Cape Spear in Newfoundland, and a group of friends out there that I will never forget. Those boys are so cool.
Oh, wow. It sounded like, you know, it's obviously a trip of a lifetime. Now, do you going to do that again at any point?
I would love to. I'm definitely going to ride back to Newfoundland one day, without a doubt. I love that place. Yeah. If you've never ridden there before, you've got to go. It's stunning. Whether I ride around the world, I've got unfinished business in Mongolia and Siberia. There's areas out there that I had to ride through quickly.
Yeah.
I have to go back. And I'm hoping in this current political climate that we're just about to embark on, it'll be okay for us.
you'll hope anyway. No plans to hit the famed Road of Bones while you're over there?
I would love to. I would love to. We'll see. That depends on the bike I'm riding at the time. I might just fly into Vladivostok and beg, borrow, or buy a bike, which means that it probably wouldn't have been prepped. It'll
Probably not.
probably ride it into the ground on the Road of Bones. But I would love to. I would love to do sections of the old Road of Bones as well. But I the more as time passes, at the moment, those sections of the road appear to be becoming more and more overgrown.
Oh, really? Oh,
So
wow.
the Kalima Highway is the main road that people do now. There are sections of the original Road of Bones that branch off of the Kalima Highway that you can intersect and do sections of it. But that's the one that was made famous by Ewan and Charlie.
Wow.
But the Kalima Highway is a big, truck gravel highway that you can easily ride into Magadan.
Now, how many hours of helmet cam footage did you get on that trip?
Hundreds and hundreds. Literally, I got hard drives full of this stuff, and it's frustrating because it's all the road coming towards you.
Oh, really? Is that it? Nothing else?
There were so I did some interviews with me and Ulf in hotel rooms or on the side of the road, that kind of stuff. But if you look at it, 95% of it is from one perspective only. So if you're listening to this, folks, try and vary your angles, please. You're not going to regret it.
Now, what kind of camera are you using?
I was using one of those small silver helmet cams that that you that everybody buys.
Oh, the GoPro, right?
Yeah. And see, I don't use that name because it's not that I don't use that name. It's just I use the word helmet cam because we don't have any sponsors. We have not. This is a purely a homegrown little thing.
Sure.
One day I'd love to attract some sponsors of some sort. But I also had a Nikon SLR that I was filming with as well, which was great. Yeah. I love that camera, but to carry an SLR and a spare lens on a bike, you've got to start thinking carefully about your space and how you're going to protect all that gear. So,
of course, yeah. Now, did you use a GPS or anything like that on that trip, or was that totally all maps?
I did. I had this. We had maps, and I had this old eTrex.
Oh, really? I got one of those.
They're great.
Yeah.
I love the thing.
The only problem is that the screen's like little super tiny. It's like a 2-inch by 3-inch screen.
It's written in microvision, you know. So I loved the thing. I was happy to use that. I got all the way to the Russian border, and then my maps ran out.
Oh, that's right. Then
I'm like, right, here we go. And my buddy Ulf said, oh, it's not a problem. He said, I have this fancy new-looking Garmin GPS that he's got. And he said, I can track all the maps. I've got all the maps of Russia on my laptop. I'll transpose them over. The old eTrex used MapSource.
Yes, absolutely. I got that.
Of course, the new Garmin used Basecamp,
yep.
And ne'er the twain shall ever meet. So I couldn't load his map. So I actually had to buy a Russian GPS.
Oh. I bought that. No, you didn't. No.
So, yeah. I actually have Topo Russia now. I was navigating through cities really easily. It was this thing would just see me through cities like you wouldn't believe. It was fantastic. So,
oh, that's funny. You know, the eTrex, believe it or not, I have the eTrex C something, I don't know. And I have used it on rides, and it has failed me more times than it's benefited me. But I am able to use it with Basecamp.
Yeah. Oh, are you?
Yeah, it's somewhat successfully. You know, you can plot it, create a route, and then upload it to... I don't know about the maps, though. You can create a route and bring it into the eTrex.
Right.
You're not going to be able to follow it too well because the screen is only 2 inches, square.
Yeah.
If you want to get somewhere. Oh, well, that's fantastic. I like that. Oh, wow. So now, what are you riding now?
I've still got the BMW. I've still got the big 1200.
Wow.
I still have my DR650. She's affectionately called Twiggy.
Twiggy.
Twiggy. She's got a nickname. The BMW is called the Princess because I actually built a garage around that one. So it is a bit of a princess, that bike. And so are the riders as well. So I can say that because I own one. but the DR650, that Twiggy is a great little bike. She's got 156,000 kilometers on the clock
really?
Now.
Really? Wow.
And she's still going strong. You know, still thumping along. Touch wood.
Yeah, and that's just regular maintenance keeping her going, right?
Yeah, keep the oil changed every 5,000. Make sure it's good oil. Don't ever cheap out on your oil. Change your filter every time you can,
yeah.
And put those magnetic ring things on the filter and also a magnetic drain plug, and it'll all be good.
Oh, right. Are you using synthetic or regular oil?
I use fully synthetic. I actually use AMS oil. I love that stuff.
No kidding.
Yeah, I love that stuff. For the DR650, it works so well.
And what kind of tires are you running?
A variety of them. My the off-road tires that I'll use on that one will be Kenda.
Okay, yeah.
K270s or whatever they are. They if you're doing lots of highway traveling, they'll wear square, which is really frustrating as we all know. But I usually use those things just for kicking around on the dirt here in the Canadian Rockies. For long distance travel, I'll usually use something like a Metzeler Torrance or Heidenau, good tires too. They're good hard wearing tires. So I put so many different types on Twiggy. Out of all of them, I think my favorite bang for buck is probably Bridgestone, the trail wings.
No kidding. Wow. Yeah. I've had mixed results with tires. The Kendas, I had no success with the Kendas. In fact, I'm a cyclist also, so I had Kendas on my mountain bike for about three rides until they blew out. So I stopped doing that. But I had Metzlers on my Sportster. Now, I'm a cruiser guy, so you may or may not see me on the dirt. I don't know. not intentionally, anyway. Or maybe intentionally. I don't know. You'll find out.
Yeah.
So tell us, what's next for Neville and the Moto X-Ped and
So we're just gearing up right now for we're going to be revamping the website because right now it still says 2016 tickets and 2016 submissions. So this winter, leading up towards Christmas, we're going to start working on this to revamp the website, gear it all up, because we start receiving submissions. We receive submissions all year round,
right?
But really, from our point of view, as soon as January comes around, everybody's got Christmas out of the way. Then we can start thinking about 5 months hence. So, that's what we're going to start doing. We're going to ramp up the website. We have a little meeting. This is our informal. We have a group that, kind of like our original group of friends that were there. That God bless them. I mean, that they're such dear friends. The 20 or so people that were there on the first ever 9 minute. We invite them back every year, and this year we've got bloopers night.
Oh, great! So, oh, that's fantastic.
Just for us. We're going to set up all the gear, and we're going to go to the Mad Dog Cafe, and we're going to do bloopers night. And it's just bring your own bloopers, submit them or whatever. This is stuff that will never see the public. I don't know what we're going to wind up seeing. But it's blooper night, and you never know. That might become a big thing eventually. But that could be
a part of the festival.
More than likely, it'll be an adult rated version. So,
oh, that's funny.
But we're going to be using a lot of social media as well. We want to try and get the word out to get people to submit more stuff. Mm-hmm. We've created this platform for people. We've created this platform for people where we want them to show off what they do.
Yeah,
and that's, doesn't matter who you are. Everybody does something impressive on a motorcycle. It's, you just got to sit on one and you feel impressive.
And keep it standing upright, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the people can submit one of their films, 9 minutes or less. How do they do this? And, you can submit your own film. How can they contact you? And the 9mmmph?
Go to, obviously, www.9mmff.com and follow all the prompts. There's actually a page there that's devoted. All you got to do is agree to the terms and conditions, because obviously we're concerned about stuff like copyright.
Of course.
So if you're going to use spectacular pieces of music, for example, gain permission, give these people recognition, put their names up on the bottom of your movie or the credits at the end or whatever,
right.
Make sure that it actually comes through. But then you fill out the declaration. It's a very simple process. Click, 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 and then you just get to upload. And it goes to our cloud storage, and we pull it down from the cloud like a little magical thing, and then we get to review it.
All right. Is there any specific format you want the movies in?
Not really, no. Once it's been submitted up there, I mean, the only thing that I would, the only thing that's really got me concerned right now, I'm serious about this. The thing that's got me concerned right now is I'm waiting for the first person to say, "Can I submit a 360 movie?"
Oh no!
It's
really?
Like, wow. Well, I'm not geared up for that yet. I'm going to have to supply a router, and everybody's going to have you know, their iPhone or whatever it is. Whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, right, right.
So they can see a 360 movie, because I can't show that.
No,
so,
you can't. So you would have to have a lot of gear for that.
please do submit a 360 movie, and it might bring me kicking and screaming into the new year. So
well, I know the little silver camera people, like you said, they have this whole 360 ball thing that people can buy.
They do,
which is strange. I mean, I guess you could, but I don't know how. I guess you're going to do your own Google Maps things when you're out riding around. I don't know.
You can do that too. Am I going to have to supply 3D glasses? I've got no idea yet.
Hey, see, now you're on to something, right? Well, Neville, listen, I want to thank you very much for joining me here on the Motorcycle Men podcast. We're going to get this out to the entire world, and hopefully you will be getting thousands and thousands of submissions, and you're going to have to spend the next 6 months looking at really bad movies.
You know what? I would love that, guy. You know, folks, we love seeing your movies. We love seeing what people do. If you think so many people think that they can't make a movie. All you got to do is get a buy a basic movie editing program, which usually comes with Microsoft anyway, for example. And just go and just have a stab at it. It's just a very short learning curve. It's a steep curve, but it's a short one. Yeah. And you can produce your own stuff. And really, what are you going to do with the rest of your footage?
Right, exactly. Oh, you know what? I don't know what I had to ask you.
Yeah.
Say something. Do you have it broken down into categories? I don't know if I asked you that, but do people get? Do they win anything?
Yes, in our main event in May, we have a first, second, and third place.
Okay,
we have these really fancy looking sort of mountain shaped. See-through glass, or they're actually made out of plastic, awards, and it's got the 9-Minute Moto Film Festival.
All right, okay.
Kind of like our own little mini. It actually looks like an award. It is really quite upmarket.
Okay.
And we also have a People's Choice as well.
Oh, all right.
But the Horizons Unlimited events that we supply movies to for the Horizons Unlimited 9-Minute version. We supply the movies that we think are going to fit best into that category.
Right.
Those people have a chance of winning the People's Choice Award.
Okay.
So they'll get voted for that night, Horizons Unlimited thing. So, but the main event is definitely in the Bow Valley here, and that's kind of like, well, for want of a better word, Oscar night.
Now, do you do the whole thing like with you know the nominees are kind of a thing, and then you somebody with the envelope? Do you do that whole thing?
We actually did that this year.
Really?
We had the nominees are. And the best thing was I was doing the announcing in front of our big screen, and I had no idea who the winners were because I wasn't a judge. So and it was a complete surprise.
Oh,
to
that's
me.
Great.
It was great. So. I think for 2017, we're probably going to use someone prettier than me, though.
Aww.
I think it's a wise choice.
All right. Well, again, Neville, thank you very much. So go ahead and check out the 9-Minute Moto Film Festival at www.9mmff.com. And you have a Facebook page, too, correct?
We do, yes. Yeah, so, look us up on Facebook.
And I suppose there's a link to that on your website, right?
There is, yeah.
Okay, good. Neville, thank you very much for joining me, and we will get this out to you and get everybody to send you a movie.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Ted.
All right. Thank you very much. Please consider subscribing to the podcast via Patreon. There's a link to our Patreon page on our homepage of the website. With your support, We can improve the podcast and add more content that only you, our subscribers, will have access to. That includes more audio, video, and live streaming of the show. For more information about the Motorcycle Men, visit our website at motorcyclemen.us. There you can join our mailing list or leave a comment and maybe give us some feedback. You know we always welcome your thoughts. If you would like to email the Motorcycle Men directly, email to motomenpc@gmail.com. Please visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/motorcyclemenpodcast. Our Twitter page is twitter.com/motorcyclemen. You can also now hear all of our episodes on YouTube. Just search for Motorcycle Men Podcast. And if you'd like to talk to us and tell us about your ride or just give us some comments, you can do that via Skype. Our Skype name is MotoMenPC. And if you find yourself doing nothing on a Tuesday night between 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, check in with us and we'll make you part of the show. And if you're a good guest, we might just send you some stuff.